Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Mary Johnson, and I'm one of the 8 worship associates who take turns working with the minister or the guest speaker in putting together our weekly worship services. Joining me on the chancel this morning is our guest speaker, Irene Gulbison. Irene has been in our pulpit several times over the last few years, and we're happy that she's back with us again today. Irene is a graduate of Eden Seminary with a master's degree in theological studies, and she's served several United Church of Christ congregations over the last few years as an interim pastor. And her sermon that we'll hear later this morning is entitled, Looking Back, Looking Around, and Looking Forward. I welcome Irene and all of you into this community of connections. In the words of songwriter Andra Day, All we need is hope, and for that we have each other. And we'll rise up like the waves. We'll rise up in spite of the ache. We'll rise up, and we'll do it 1,000 times again. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal, and place the card in the offering basket plate or give it to an usher, and we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. And we welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We have a nursery for infants and young children, five and younger, through those doors to your left and in the first room past the foyer. Children 6 and older and our youth are asked to stay with their families during the worship service today. We will have religious education classes for the elementary age kids next Sunday on June 25th. And here at the front to my right is a spirit table with quiet activities for all ages. And you're invited to go to the spirit table at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. You don't have to be a kid to do that. Some people like to play with pipe cleaners. That's fine. I have a couple other announcements. One from Carol McGrew, who could not be here today, talking about Pride Fest, 23rd through 25th at Soldiers Memorial Park in downtown St. Louis. Friday from 4:30 to 10:30, Saturday from 11 to 9, and Sunday from 11 to 7. The Pride Fest float decorating on Saturday is 6:24, is from 3 to 5 at the First Unitarian Church in at the Central West End. And the first Unitarian Church young adult leader, Claire, will be facilitating this event, and so all are welcome to come. And a special worship service will be held at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church in St. Louis in the Central West End at 9:30. On Sunday, and after that at 11, everyone will take Metrolink downtown for the parade. And the parade will be on Sunday, 6:25 at noon, and on the festival grounds. And the theme for the Pride Fest is Community Proud. And if you need more information, contact Carol McGrew. And I want to thank Wayne and Lucy for bringing the flowers today. And so if any of you would like to bring flowers on any Sunday, please do so. I don't think there are any other announcements. And so we'll begin our service with a prelude from our accompanist, Nicole Robbins. Thank you. I invite Ben Heff to come now and light our chalice as we join in the unison words printed in your order of service and projected on the wall. We gather this hour as people of faith with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning in celebration of the life we share together. My call to worship words were written by Ann Mason, and the call to worship words are entitled The Circle of Connection in Ourselves. Spirit of life, your very presence among us is what gives us connection. Help us to sense that beneath our feet is the strength we need to keep us grounded. Help us to feel that behind our back is the protection we need to feel safe in facing our fears. Help us to know that before our eyes lies the beauty we seek to feel astounded. Help us to lift our heads high enough to be aware of the vastness of our sky and of our spirit. And help us know that within our hearts lies the love we need to complete the circle of connection in our lives. We are grateful, Spirit of Love, for this day. May we use all these gifts, our feet, our backs, our eyes, our heads, and our hearts, to bring love into this hurting world, this world which we so value, which we so cherish. I invite you now to rise in body and our spirit to join on our opening hymn, Morning Has Broken, number 38 in the gray hymnal or on the wall. Share the time for all ages.
Okay. I invite not only the young, I'll have to take the microphone. Is it easy to take it out here? There we go. I think I got it. Okay. I invite not only the young, but also the young at heart to come forward. I'm a non-techie. I'm not doing a screen. So I need some company up here. I'll feel very lonely. Oh, Ben, thank you. I always rely on Ben. He's Caesar. Well, hi, Phil. Okay, great. So glad to have you up here. All right. Now, today we're going to talk about holidays. Now, it's a special holiday today, but we'll come back to that one. We're going to talk about some other holidays. We celebrate a lot of holidays. If you go online, it's amazing. What are some of the holidays that we we celebrate each year. St. Patrick's Day, one of my favorites. No cards, no gifts, easy cooking. I love it. It's inclusive. Everybody likes St. Patrick's Day. How about some others? What's a big one? What's a big one? Yeah. Christmas. You betcha. Christmas. And what else? Halloween. Memorial Day, right? We just celebrated that not too long ago, right? And we have 4th of July. That's coming up, right? Okay. And Big Turkey Day. Thanksgiving, we have Martin Luther King Day. We have another favorite of mine, Groundhog Day. Okay, means that winter's halfway done. I'm always in favor of that. Okay, we have Valentine's Day. We have lots and lots of holidays. And if you look online, there's lots of other holidays. I mean, like the Pride Fest, that's a holiday that's celebrated. So, but we also have funny holidays. If you look online, we celebrate some amazing things. For instance, on January 3rd, we have the Festival of Sleep Day. I like that. That's probably from too much partying on January 1st. What do you think, right? And the same day, it's also National Fruitcake Toss Day. We have January 8th is National Bubble Bath Day. You wonder who thinks these up. Okay. March 14th is Save a Spider Day. Okay. You in favor of saving spiders? Well, maybe not. I am. I do it more than on March 14th. And on June 4th, we celebrated both National Donut Day and National Hug Your Cat Day. Now, I don't know if there's a relationship there, but, you know, whatever. Okay. But today is a special day that we're celebrating. And what's that? Father's Day, right? Father's Day, okay. We celebrate that on, I guess it's the third Sunday of June each year, so it kind of changes its date. Okay, and what do we celebrate on Father's Day? Who do we celebrate? Fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers and probably uncles, right? And all of those men in our who have served as special guides to us during our life. So it doesn't have to necessarily be a blood relative, but just someone special in our life, okay? Now, are any of you fathers here? Okay, we have one father, and so we have one father, so we're going to give you something special here. Hold on. Okay, there you go. There's your reward. Okay. Now, anyone right here have a father? Okay, all right. So guess what? You all get one too. All right. There you go. Ruth, would you like?
My father is deceased.
Well, you had a father, though. Yes, okay. Now I'm going to open this up even more. Anyone here who has or has had a father? Yes, okay. So now I'm going to give you young people a special job here. I have to get them out. Okay, you're going to go back and give everybody a candy, okay? And if there's any left, you can get out, you know? All right, there we go. All right. The getting up so was the hard part. Oh, I didn't give you one. I'm sorry, Phil. There you go. Oh, all right, great. There you go. Yeah, sure. Here you go. I have, I should have six. Maybe I only have five. Oh, no, here it is. There you go. All right. I took some out of that. Okay, so everybody has a father. Or someone in their life who has been like a father to them. Okay, great. You gave them all away. Super, Ben. Okay, come on back. There's more work to be done. More work. You don't have to sit on the floor, though, Phil. You don't have to sit on the floor. Okay, now, here's the fun, amusing thing. Is tomorrow, do you know what tomorrow is? Day after Father's Day, but something else. It's National Kiss Day. Kiss Day. Now, I'm not asking you to go and kiss everybody, but guess what? I got kisses for everybody. Okay, so I'm going to give you each some, and you can give everybody a kiss, and if there's extra, you can keep them. Now, if anybody is diabetic, I do have pretzels. It's not National Pretzel Day, but it's the best I could do. There you go, Phil.
Just a couple, because she beats me to everybody.
Oh, does she? Okay, here you go. All right, and whatever's left, we'll put on the table out here. There you go. So you can celebrate Father's Day with a kiss and National Kiss Day tomorrow. I thought that was kind of a cute thing that happened, yeah. Okay. So let me move my little mess here. Okay, so I thank everybody for participating. All right. Okay, getting up now. That's the tough part.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Irene. We won't be singing the children out today. They will be staying in the worship service. Please join in the responsive reading, number 568, found in your gray hymnals or on the wall. Connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground. More than half a tree is spread out in the soil under your feet. Fight persistently as the creeper that brings down the tree. Gnaw in the dark and use the sun to make sugar. Live a life you can endure. Make love that is living, loving. Live as if you like yourself, and it may happen. This is how we are going to live for a long time, not always.
For every garden knows, after the beginning, after the planting, after the long season of tending and growth, the harvest comes.
A religious community is like a river formed from the many streams of our lives that meet and merge and flow into the sea. As members and friends of this religious community, we share our time and energy, our creativity, imagination, and vision, our talents, skills, and gifts, and the streams of our individual lives to create a river that is both deep and broad, a river that is made of many streams, sustains life, and refreshes the land through which it flows. But this river of community also depends on our shared financial support that makes real our shared values and vision. We will now receive an offering for the support of this religious community and its work in the world. You are invited to give generously and joyfully as you are willing and able. Each week we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows of this community. For the things in our hearts that we hold in silence, we recognize them by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter, or from the bowl at the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our lives through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community. If you have a joy, a sorrow, a celebration, or struggle you wish to recognize, you're invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. This morning's prayer was written by Reverend Sean Parker Dennison, and we'll follow the prayer with a time of silence, called back with the chime. Spirit of life and love, in these times when so much seems difficult, help us remember that we are not alone. We have each other. Help keep our connections strong, and remind us that kindness, generosity, and trust are antidotes to fear. Help us remember that our hope and our power grow when we are faithful to our deepest commitments and to each other. May we rise up to do the work of love again and again. Amen. I invite you now to rise in body and our spirit and join in hymn 219, O Hear My People. It is in the gray hymnal and on the wall.
Thank you.
We'll begin this morning with a few words of wisdom from Koheleth, who is the author of the book of Ecclesiastes. Next, I saw under the sun something else that was pointless. There are people who are utterly alone, with no companions, not even a child or a sibling. Yet they work hard without end, never satisfied with their wealth. So for whom am I working so hard and depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is pointless and a terrible obsession. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their hard work. If either should fail, one can pick up the other. But how miserable are those who fall and don't have a companion to help lift them up. Also, if two lie down together, they can stay warm. But how can anyone stay warm alone? Also, one can be overpowered, but two together can put up a resistance. A three-ply cord does not easily snap. Though my math may be a wee bit off, I would guesstimate that in the last 20 plus years, I've had the opportunity, and for the most part, the pleasure, of preparing and delivering about 200 sermons. Over that same 20 year period, I've also enjoyed attending several synagogue services, a Sri Lankan Buddhist ceremony, a Hindu wedding, I visited several mosques overseas, and preached at a wide variety of churches, mainly UCC, but with a sprinkling of Methodist, Anglican, Presbyterian, and of course, a dab of Unitarianism. If nothing else, I consider myself ecumenical to the core. Needless to say, however, as far as preparing sermons goes, there are definite differences in approach. For the most part, mainline churches rely on what's referred to as the common lectionary, a three-year cycle of readings organized around three of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But each week there are also three other readings included, usually one psalm, one reading from the Old Testament, and a selection from either the book of Acts or from a New Testament letter. And just in case you're interested, 2017 is Matthew's year. Now, as you well know, this is not the case here. And I have to tell you, I do enjoy the different focus. The challenge for me, however, is what will be my text? Fortunately, I have discovered that NPR is an excellent source of possibilities. Even though people like Phil have told me about certain books like Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes, and I love that book, I suspect others here rely on NPR as well. Last week, Tracy Howe Koch, for instance, mentioned that NPR introduced her to the book which was the basis of her sermon on moving past original sin. And by the way, just in case you're interested, the word sin actually does not appear in the book of Genesis at all. And it certainly doesn't appear, therefore, in the story of Adam and Eve. Remember, story of Adam and Eve. Although the concept of original sin was alluded to sometime in the second century by Irenaeus, but the whole concept of original sin was not popularized until the 4th century when the church had become the religion of the Roman Empire. We can thank St. Augustine. Needless to say, many other shifts in interpretation occurred then and later on as well. Now, back to today. If you remember, last November I shared with you the short but powerful book The Tribe by Sebastian Junger, and I know you've been studying that. And as I remember, the main text was only a little over 130 pages. Oh, there were notes, but once again, not many. Today, I am relying on four books. not to worry. Four books by sociologist Robert D. Putnam, a Harvard professor, most noted for a book he wrote in 2000 entitled Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community. In contrast to The Tribe, these books together consist of over 1,900 pages. Although, to be fair, only 1,500 of those pages consist of actual text. The rest consist of acknowledgments, data analysis, notes, lots and lots of notes, and indices. But you can see the job of condensation to provide a 20-minute, give or take, sermon was a challenge, but it certainly was an interesting one. First, the time context, always important. Although Putnam had written several books before Bowling Alone, published in this one was published in 2000, and it's his seminal one. So much so that just 6 weeks ago, it was referred to in an article in The Economist. It said that his book could provide current and future historians with important early warning signs of what occurred in our 2016 election. I thought that was very interesting. Now, I could have just relied on Putnam's 17-year-old book, but I thought since a lot has transpired since the year 2000, 9/11, our invasion of Afghanistan and Iran, the Arab Spring, and a number of important elections and economic situations, just to name a few, I thought a look at some of Putnam's later work would provide an important lens to see how his findings have played out over the years. And that's why I added Better Together, Restoring the American Community, co-written with Lewis Feldstein and published in 2003, American Grace, How Religion Divides and Unites Us, written by Putnam and David E. Campbell, and that was published in 2010, and then most recently, Our Kids, The American Dream in Crisis, which was written just by Putnam and published in 2015. However, I largely will be relying on Bowling Alone, which has as its central subject matter, as Putnam states early on, an in-depth analysis of what has happened to civic and social life over the years. He refers to the fact that in recent years, social scientists have framed concerns about the changing character of American society in terms of the concept of social capital, like the notions of physical capital and human capital, tools and training that enhance individual productivity. The core idea of social capital theory is that social networks have value. Now, I have to be honest, this language I think is a bit heady. As a result, I think I will frequently refer to this concept of as interpersonal tools that build community. Actually, Putnam also uses the term community, but he points out that we should not understand the word community as referring to something warm and cuddly. Communities can be, in fact, as we well know, based on ideas and behavior that's both malevolent and antisocial. So it's always important to ask how positive consequences of community building, that is mutual support, cooperation, trust, and institutional effectiveness can be maximized, and negative manifestations such as sectarianism, ethnocentrism, and corruption can be minimized. The aim should be towards inclusiveness, that is bridging with others, not just bonding to others in an exclusive way. Bonding, Putnam says, is a lot like super glue, whereas bridging is more like sociological WD-40. I like that. In truth, however, bonding and bridging are not an either-or sort of category, but more or less dimensions along which we can compare different forms of community building and maintenance. Now, that said, we can turn to the heart of Putnam's analysis of what has happened to American society over the years, especially since the 1950s. As it turns out, and I'm sure lots of you are aware of this, the post-World War II generation was perhaps the most civic-minded in all of our history. In the words of a Life magazine article in early 1964, Americans were flocking to all sorts of organizations, both civic and social. From bowling leagues, I have a feeling that's part of the title here, to garden clubs, and folks were satisfying their gregarious urges in countless neighborhood committees to improve things like local roads and garbage pickup. Church membership was also at an all-time high, as was participation in everything from bridge groups to the Elks clubs to the PTA. Early on, however, Putnam does raise one important caveat, which is important in thinking of all of this, and that is in the 50s and the 60s, this could not be considered a truly golden age for those Americans who were marginalized because of race, gender, social class, or sexual orientation. Segregation by race legally and by gender socially were the norm. America, at least as portrayed in Life magazine, for instance, was white, straight, Christian, comfortable, and at least in the public square, male. But then in the 60s and the 70s, things began to change. First slowly, and then increasingly rapidly. And this has rendered obsolete a significant stock of interpersonal community building. Would anyone like to name some of the factors that they think might be instrumental in this shift? Remember, we're talking up to the year 2000.
Consciousness raising.
What do you think is the most important thing? It starts with the letter T. Television. Suddenly, you didn't have to go out. You didn't have to clean house to have friends visit. You'd invite in TV friends. So more and more time was being spent inside. You might be with your immediate family, but you were sitting in front of the television, okay? That's the most important one. But actually, other things occurred too. We had the start of two career families in a much larger way than it had been before. We had suburban sprawl, which changed communities as well. And of course, a generational shift in values. While I would not say that Putnam ends Bowling Alone on a particularly positive note, he mentions, for instance, that at the end of the 20th century, unlike immediately following World War II, Americans felt vaguely and uncomfortably disconnected. And we wished we lived in a more civil, more trustworthy, and more collectively sharing community. However, he did retain a certain amount of optimism in suggesting that by working together, we could spark the civic imaginations of our fellow citizens to discover and work out new ways of connecting socially that fit our changed lives. He strongly promoted a stronger emphasis, that's a double word there, on civics education in grade school and high school, as well as encouraged well-designed community service projects for young people, perhaps with intergenerational mentoring as a component. Participation in extracurricular activities he felt was another way to increase civic and social involvement on the part of young people. We'll have to talk to our young people afterwards. But then there are the possibilities that could be developed in the workplace and in the new urbanism that was just taking place across in cities across the nation. And then, of course, there was the huge potential of faith-based communities. Nowhere, however, was there more need to restore connectedness, trust, and civic engagement than in public forums of our democracy. Financial capital, he said, desperately needs to be replaced by social capital. And finally, Putnam points out that no sector of the American society will have more influence on the state of social connectedness than the electronic mass media, especially the internet. But for this to work, he says, it needs to be part of the solution instead of a big part of the problem. And all of us need to spend less time sitting passively in front of glowing screens and more time in active face-to-face interaction with our fellow citizens. To build bridging social capital, community connectedness requires that we transcend our social, political, and professional identities to connect with people not just like us, but unlike ourselves. Now, though I mentioned earlier presentation of the major findings and focus of bowling alone was my primary goal today, Putnam's later books each offer some interesting thoughts. Better Together presents an analysis of 12, in quotes, success stories of people who have built and participated in networks of positive relationship. One important, though not surprising, finding was that building and maintaining social networks takes time and patience, somewhat like the hymn that we sang this morning. It's an incremental and cumulative process. It tends to be a local phenomenon. Smaller is better than larger, and usually it's developed in the pursuit of a particular goal or set of goals. It's also about building relationships through conversations which can actually change us. Abstract ideas do not connect people, stories do. And doing with is far superior than doing for. The iron rule, he says, is allowing people to do for themselves what they're able to do for themselves. The goal is always to avoid a certain kind of colonial welfareism. Found that interesting. The focus of our kids is a discussion about the increasingly stark divisions between the haves and have-nots in all of American society. Putnam begins by revisiting his hometown of Port Clinton, Ohio, which in the 50s was one of those booming industrial towns and is now a prime example of the Rust Belt phenomenon. He then goes on to address rapid changes which have occurred not only there, but across the United States. And finally, American Grace, which, as its subtitle indicates, is a study of how religion divides and unites us. Of all four books, perhaps this is the most upbeat of all of them, because though it discusses the growth of conservative religious groups in the wake of the sexually libertine 1960s and those groups' influence on partisan politics, which we're all very aware of, it also affirms that, as in truth, only about 10% of the population can be classified as fundamentalists, those claiming there's only one true religion. In fact, there's an increasing number of mixed marriages now, okay, mixed faith marriages, which has tended to make most of us more accepting of folks of different faiths. And it is this growing web of interlocking personal relationships among many people of many different faiths, which Putnam and Campbell celebrate as the heart of America's grace. Now, in closing, I am going to turn once again to what I began with, assuming I can find it. Next, I saw under the sun something else that was pointless. There are people who are utterly alone, with no companions, not even a child or a sibling. Yet they work hard without end, never satisfied with their wealth. So for whom am I working so hard and denying myself enjoyment?
This too is a pointless and terrible obsession. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their hard work. If either should fall, one can pick the other up. But how miserable are those who fall and don't have a companion to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they can stay warm. But how can anyone stay warm alone? Also, one can be overpowered, but two together can put up resistance. A three-ply cord doesn't easily snap. In the area of building and maintaining positive human relationships, there really is nothing new under the sun. Now, let us all stand and join together in singing hymn 1008 in the teal hymnal, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place, or the words will be up on the screen. Us all out to be people willing to open ourselves up to conversation with others and to ask the question, how can we improve things by inviting others along with us? Not think we have all the ideas, we have all the answers, but to listen to others in the community to help solve those pressing problems. If we could do that and others would do that, I think the world would be a much kinder and more merciful place. It would be a holy place. I send you forth.